Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano coming up on Inside Coverage. How bad is the Steelers' defense? As bad as their uniforms. How good is the Colts' offense? Some of these numbers may blow you away. And Frank Schwab has trade deadline deals that could and maybe should be done. Inside Coverage coming up next. Are we halfway there yet? Almost. Almost. Welcome to yet another edition of Inside Coverage here. A Monday edition with week 8 all but almost done of Inside Coverage. The how and the why, the any and everything you need to know about the National Football League from the home office in Los Angeles or thereabouts, Southern California. My name is Andrew Siciliano. After a blowout Sunday, the NFL has a great PR machine. Hi there, Frank Schwab, where they always like to tell you on Sunday night, we had so many games that were this close. So many games with fourth quarter comebacks. We had one in Cincinnati, oh, by the way. So many games that came right down to the wire with the margin of victory and the game being in down to the final couple of seconds. Except yesterday, when it was basically a blowout fest. Save for a few interesting matchups here or there. How are you, sir? How was your Sunday?
Doing well. And yeah, look, it's just random luck of the draw. Like sometimes you're just going to get a bad week of football. This was truly a bad week of football. Not just the blowouts. I think 11 of 12 games decided by double digits or more, but just all the favorites winning. Like there wasn't even many upsets other than obviously the Jets with the one good game on the schedule. Falcons, that was an embarrassing loss for them to the Dolphins. Every other favorite won and covered the spread, I believe, 10-2 against the spread for the favorites there. Not that you were in that world, Andrew, but I am. So, yeah, just a bad week of football, and it happens. But I do think if there's any takeaway, like, you know, we try to take away stuff from random events that happen on a Sunday in the fall. Maybe there's just a lot of bad teams in the NFL. For this point in season too, and it kind of leads into the trade deadline, doesn't it? Like you're going to see teams next week who are like, yeah, what are we doing? The Bengals, for good example. Like, what are we chasing? Like, are we chasing like 8-9 this season and not making the playoffs? Like, and we'll sit on Logan Wilson and Trey Hendrickson. I think there's going to be a look in the mirror moment for a lot of these teams who we saw just get absolutely positively blown out on Sunday to say, yeah, you know what? We're really not that good this season, and we need to start thinking about whether we're sellers or not.
It's great tease by you, Frank, talented broadcast professional, teasing that coming up in about 20 minutes, we will break down your article right now up on Yahoo about potential trade targets ahead of the deadline. If you don't know when the trade deadline is, just think election day. Okay, maybe you're not politically savvy and all politics are local. You should be voting, by the way. Next Tuesday, when you go to the polls, NFL GMs go to their phones to work out deals. So the trade deadline next Tuesday, we will dive into Frank's piece. You should go read it right now, multitask before we get to it in about 20 minutes as to who could be moving. And Frank, it brings us back to the parity conversation. You say there aren't many good teams. Is it parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y, or is it parody, P-A-R-O-D-Y, and that some teams are just parodies of good teams? We thought you might be good, but in essence, this is a parody account of a real NFL team.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem is in the NFL is you always are, these teams, as you know, Andrew, we've both covered the league a long time. These teams always want to be optimistic. Oh, hey, if we just get this guy healthy and we just beat the Lions on Sunday, we're going to get on a run and look at the rest of our schedule. We can slide into the wild card and anything could happen. They always think like that, always. Like, and it just is not true for some of these teams. And we really saw that on Sunday. I think that is part of, I think some of it's random. Some of it's just random events that you're just going to have 10 blowouts on a Sunday. But some of it is just, yes, the haves and the have-nots. And I don't think there's any great teams in the NFL this season. But I do think you see a separation between the top half and the bottom half. So trust me, Andrew, as somebody who spends 18 straight Mondays during the fall ranking football teams, I can tell you the bottom of the rankings are pretty ugly. There are a lot of teams there who are just, yeah, it's not even Halloween. And you're like, yeah, we can cross you off the list. We're fine to move on.
Yeah, I get it. We're rearranging deck chairs. Before we get to Sunday night, real quick, want to get some news breaking here into our respective newsrooms, i.e. our homes. And that is the Vikings are putting Carson Wentz on injured reserve. He needs shoulder surgery. surgery. He's left his non-throwing shoulder. We saw him in abject pain on the field and down on his back in the late moments of how the week opened, a blowout win for the Chargers over the Vikings on Thursday night here in Los Angeles. Shoulder surgery, he's done. It means J.J. McCarthy is back. Now, we knew J.J. was going to come back this week. Kevin O'Connell said it immediately after the game on Thursday night. When he is healthy, he is our starter, and it's expected that he is going to be healthy this week. It ain't going to be easy, though, for J.J. Vikings are on the road at Detroit this Sunday, and that's just one in a number of very difficult games coming up for them.
Yeah.
I think this guarantees we're going to see Max Brosmer this maybe not this week, but this season. He's the rookie undrafted kid. They love him out of Minnesota. I'm not suggesting that J.J. McCarthy is going to fail. Not at all. I would like to see him do well, although we've only seen just brief glimpses of that. But J.J., if history is any guide here, is not going to make it through the season. I'm not rooting for an injury. I just know that he's never stayed healthy. He's only played like three games in his NFL career. So I'd say this injury means get ready to see Max Brosmer at one point.
Probably true. But I do think that the voluntary part of benching J.J. McCarthy, giving him extra time, that's kind of out the window. If Wentz was still there, and the Vikings, let's say they were still kind of hanging around that playoff race or one of those optimistic teams I just talked about, they might be saying, boy, J.J. looks like the J.J. from the first 2 weeks. We need to make a move right now. Let's get Wentz in there. He was at least competent with the offense. That's out the window now. I don't think that there's any point in the season in which the Vikings voluntarily just say, J.J., take a seat. We're going to see what Brosmer has. If they do, that's a really, really, really bad sign for the Vikings, because at that point, you're just saying the 10th pick ain't ready. We'd rather try out the undrafted guy. So in some ways, Andrew, I do think that this takes a little bit of pressure off of McCarthy. There's maybe some pressure on him to stay healthy. But I think the pressure, there's nobody looking over his shoulder right now. Not realistically. I get they like Brosmer, and they should. Like he looked good in preseason and all that. But realistically, I think this is JJ's job the rest of the season. Go make mistakes, kid. Like it's going to happen. We're fine with that. We have no other option anyway. So go play. Go be you. Don't feel any pressure to we're going to bench you because we really don't have any other option now. I think that pressure is off J.J. McCarthy, but you're right about the injuries. Now he has to stay healthy, or you know, you're going to an undrafted rookie, and that's not really what the Vikings want to do this season.
And you make a good point as well about the lack of pressure here, but the schedule is not going to in any way alleviate the pressure. They're at Detroit, and then home for the Ravens and the Bears, at Chicago, and then at Seattle. I mean, the next five games for J.J., well, look, it's big boy football. There are no easy outs in this league. So the schedule is what it is. You're on a 15-win team from a year ago in the best division a year ago in the NFL. So it's going to be a difficult grind. But, hey, JJ's got to get in there and swim, and hopefully he can for his sake. All right, speaking of that division, the Packers won another game. The Packers went into Pittsburgh on Sunday night, and they pulled away in the fourth quarter, 21 points in the fourth quarter. Tucker Kraft went nuts, and the Packers beat the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers 35-25. By the way, Jori Epstein, who is not here today, but will be back later in the week, wrote a fantastic article. She is back on Tuesday about this game, and Aaron Rodgers, who didn't address the team afterwards but did address the media. It wasn't a revenge game. He just got outplayed by a better team with a better quarterback at the moment, and the Steelers defense still obviously has a lot of issues. It was really loud there for, and everyone noted this, for Packers fans. It felt like a neutral site game at times. It felt like a Packer home crowd, which is nothing that ever happens at Acrisure. I don't know why that was the case. Obviously, Frank, Green Bay fans travel well. Maybe it was the Steelers fans and their disdain for the uniforms. Can we put these uniforms up? These were as bad as, I don't know that you can get much worse than these. Years ago, the Steelers had throwback uniforms, and I'm all for nostalgia, but you're throwing it back here to when they were the laughingstock of American football back in the 30s. They were the worst team in football here with these uniforms. They years ago had the vertical stripes. It was right out of Gangs of New York, and this kind of is that look as well, with Aaron Rodgers playing the role of Daniel Day-Lewis. None of this works for me here.
I get that.
Nor does their defense work for them right now either, which is a problem.
Yeah. But by the way, we were robbed of a very classic jersey matchup because the Packers went all white. I do not like their alternates. I can't lie. I do the throwbacks. I do like throwbacks, especially when they're very kitschy like this. The Broncos wearing the 1960 horizontal socks or whatever like that. But yeah, I would have just liked to see the green and gold against the black and yellow, but it didn't happen. That's fine. But on the field, yes, the Steelers looked ugly because you just realize this team is not very good. And I don't know where they go from here. I think that you saw in the second half yesterday with Jordan Love completed 20 straight passes. The Steelers couldn't do anything right. Now, they did play a good first half. I'll give them that. But I think it was just what we've seen most of this season. You look back to week one, Justin Fields ripped them apart, right? Like, they've had games where they have not played a murderer's row of quarterbacks yet. And they've given up some big games to some really mediocre quarterbacks. And then Jordan Love just goes nuclear on them in the second half. And the Packers defense got going. It's a Steelers team that the defense looks old. It just got old in a hurry. And they're just not capable of being that top 10 defense we're used to from the Steelers. And the offense isn't good enough to make up for that. Like, Aaron Rodgers has had a very competent, perfectly fine season so far, but he ain't Aaron Rodgers of even 5 years ago. And we know that. He's old. Like, that happens when you turn 40 years old, especially quarterback. So I look at the Steelers as a team with kind of a bad defense right now, really kind of a mediocre offense. And now they're only two games up on the Ravens. I said last week, Ravens are winning that division. And I believe it even more now. I don't see any way the Steelers hold them off. I just don't think this is a very good football team. And then, Andrew, we get into a conversation of where the Steelers go from here. Like, it's not a team that's like among the elite and you could just fill in a couple pieces and we're going to keep this thing going for a while. It's a team that's been mediocre for a few years. Every Mike Tomlin critic has pointed out how long it's been since they've won a playoff game and how long it's been since they've been elite. All that stuff is true. And now you got a really old roster. And what do? Do you just blow this thing up? Do you find a new head coach? I don't think the Pittsburgh Steelers' next head coach is going to be better than Mike Tomlin. I'm going to say that right now. But maybe. I don't know. I just look at the Steelers as being in a really, really, really bad place right now.
Yeah, I don't know. So here are the standings. And look, it's interesting here because if the Steelers had won, they'd be 5-3.
And if you just look at
the
standings, they look fine, right? 4-3.
Bengals lost. Like, eh. I don't believe in the Ravens yet. I really don't. And the Browns are what they are. They're 2-6. Look, if they had won this one yesterday, and I said it coming into the Browns game in New England, you get to 3-5, you get a bye week, and then you get the Jets. I mean, 3-5 in this division is certainly in it. Because Pittsburgh has only 4 wins. I think the Steelers are exactly where we thought they would be before the season. And this is for my money here. And that is a 10-7, 9-8 kind of team that is right on, in the battle for the top of the division, but likely a wild card team and likely not a team that's probably one and done. And then once again, you're in that 20 to 21 to 22 position in the draft where you can't find Aaron Rodgers' replacement. I was all for the Aaron Rodgers experiment because, like, Will Howard as your 6th round pick or whomever you could have taken at 21 or 20, wherever they are when they took Derek Harmon, and it could have been Shador there potentially. They could have taken Jackson Dart, one of those two.
Take a Jackson Dart.
I mean, was that guy the future? They chose not to. Okay. But I made the point that if they were going to be 10-7 again and spin their wheels and not make it to a conference championship game, then once again, they're going to be an old and expensive roster with no clear path to finding their new franchise quarterback. Because picking between 20 and 23 is a really bad way to consistently go through life not being able to find a franchise quarterback to replace the guy that is now doing podcasts. That guy's been gone for a while now, and you haven't found a way to replace it. It is only through 8 weeks. I'm not ready to write them off yet, but this is the most expensive defense in football. They've given up 30 points in back-to-back weeks, and I don't know how they're going to magically fix it. And offensively, they could go trade for a wide receiver. I know MVS came in. He's Aaron Rodgers' buddy. He worked out. I mean, that's the low lift. That's the easy lift to bring in him. Marquez Valdez-Scantling as a potential deep threat. Are they going to trade for Olave, Rashid Shaheed, or someone like that, or Calvin Ridley? Maybe. But this offense right now operates at its best when they are in 13 personnel or when they bring in an extra offensive lineman and they just try to run downhill at you and lean on you a little bit with Darnell Washington and with Spencer Anderson as that extra 6th eligible. That team is not built to come from behind. That team is not built to rally when you're down three scores. So if you get into a shootout like they did with Joe Flacco last week on Thursday night, or if you have to rally and try to get into a shootout of the fourth quarter with Jordan Love, you're not going to win. That's not how you are built to win. So the defense has to be better. And I just don't know if that's going to happen.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, you said only 8 weeks in, you're not willing to write them off. I will. I'll write them off. I don't think there's a very good team. Like, I just, yes, they might win this division because it's a bad division. But you talked about that, you know, with their offense, you know, 13, you're correct. That is their best offense. What's your ceiling, though? You're trotting three tight ends out there. Jonnu Smith is your number two receiving option. It's not going to take you very far, especially when your quarterback's 41 years old. And I just don't see anything left for the Steelers. They might win the division if the Ravens fall apart, and they could. Just because they beat the Bears doesn't mean they're back. You're right. We'll talk about them in a few. But I just don't know. Like, you talked about trades. Okay, you go trade for Jacoby Myers. What does that really do for you? Does that get you to the point where you feel like, wow, we could win a playoff game or two against the Bills or against the Chiefs? Or no, it doesn't. And I think that this has been the conversation we've been having about the Steelers for, like, what, 5 years now, where you're just like, they're too good to just blow it up, but they're not good enough to really make any noise and be relevant in the playoffs. And it's a tough place to be in the NFL when you just are kind of stuck in no man's land. If we're not good enough to be good, we're not good enough to really put a scare into the Bills in January or anything, but we're not bad enough to get a good draft pick. We're not bad enough to trade off everybody to try to get draft picks. It just, they're stuck. They're stuck in this. I still say they probably go into week 18 at 8-8. Like, that's what I said before the season. I probably still believe that. I think by that point, the Ravens have swept them already and have taken control of the division. The Steelers team isn't very good. No matter what their record was a couple weeks ago, there were so many flaws, especially the defense. Defense is a surprise. It's not a surprise that they're 4-3. Like, that, okay, we expected them to be around 500 by now. It's just the defense that's a surprise. I expected nothing else. Like, okay, the defense is going to be really good and keep them in games, and we'll see how good Aaron Rodgers is at his age. It's been kind of opposite. Like, Aaron Rodgers has kind of exceeded expectations for his age, and the defense has just fallen apart. And I don't know how you fix that. They're not going to get younger. That ain't going to happen during the season.
No, they're not. I mean, they could try, but I don't know that anyone has proven how to get younger, especially.
And how, by the way, real quick, how did they pass on Jackson Dart? Like, how did, like, a team that needed a quarterback so bad, Jackson Dart? Because you look at Jackson Dart now. How good would how much better, Andrew, would you feel about the Steelers in their future if Jackson Dart was their quarterback?
I'll tell you why. Because they passed him because they have Aaron Rodgers and they're trying to win right now. So take it a quarterback. Rodgers has been down that road before. Yeah. But you're not going to go sign Aaron Rodgers and take a quarterback right behind him in the first round. You're not.
I know. But
they should have to win right now.
And that was their flaw. That was their mistake. You go back into the offseason, and at that point, Aaron Rodgers hadn't signed, by the way. He didn't sign until later in the offseason. It was talked about over and over and over and over again in the offseason.
But they knew.
At that point, you draft Jackson Dart, and you say, Aaron, if you don't want to come in, that's fine. We get it. But this is our quarterback of the future, and he's going to play behind you to start the season, just like Russell Wilson in New York. But either the evaluation was bad, or like you said, they're just in win-now mode, and we can't get Jackson Dart because that'll upset Aaron. You drafted a defensive tackle over Jackson Dart. You've been searching for quarterback throughout the years, and you had one kind of fall in your lap. I love Jackson Dart. I think he's been everything and more that he could be advertised to be for the Giants. How good would he look with the Steelers? And they just blew it. They just blew that. Like, they could have. He didn't have to move up. They didn't have to get a top 10 pick. You just had Jackson Dart fall in your laps, and you drafted a defensive tackle.
They drafted Derek Armour to replace Cam Hayward, who's likely in his last year. There. Real quick, I want to tap the base here on the Ravens. So the Ravens won. I mean, that's the headline here. The Ravens got off the schneid and they come back from their bye and they beat the Bears after a late Caleb Williams interception. They pull away, intercepted deep back on their own end, and then Nate Wiggins gets him, and then they score right after that. And the Ravens beat the Bears 30-16. The story here is what led up to Tyler Huntley starting the game. The Ravens all week, and we talked about this all week with you, with Charles, with Jory, about why is this spread 6.5? And I'm not trying to get too deep into the gambling part of it, but I'm like, the Bears have won 4 in a row. We don't know if Lamar is going to play. The spread is really big. Lamar was limited Wednesday, limited Thursday, even though Harbaugh had said, I hope he comes back after the bye, and then all of a sudden, he's listed as a full participant on Friday. Everyone assumes, well, you're going to start, because let me explain, people. If you're full on Friday, it means you're going to play. OK, Okay.
Yes.
It means you are going to play. There's no official designation, but it's how all 32 teams operate. Mm-hmm. If you're limited full, it means you're ready. Friday's practice is the biggest indicator to Sunday participation, and everybody knows that. Limited full means you are playing. And then all of a sudden, and I want to tip my cap to my colleague, my friend Ian Rappaport from NFL Network. Ian reports Saturday. I'm on a plane. I'm on my way to Providence because that's where teams gather before they play the Patriots in Providence, Rhode Island, as the Patriots play in middle of nowhere, Massachusetts. And I see Ian says that Lamar Jackson did participate in practice Friday, but he ran the scout team. And I was like, oh?
Yeah,
you
right.
Can't do that.
Nope.
NFL rules stipulate that if you are a starter, and there's no gray area, Lamar Jackson's a starter. Now, there's some guys who may start, for example, in base defense or nickel defense. There's a gray area. No, there's no gray area with Lamar. If you're a starter and you run scout team for a day, you are not a full participant. You're a limited participant. And if you ran scout team because of some kind of medical issue, you are absolutely a limited participant. That is what the rule book says very clearly, and teams know it. And after Ian's journalistic whatever, congratulations, the Ravens issue a statement saying, oh, total misunderstanding. Lamar was limited on Friday. And we are now ruling him out of the game. Ravens afterwards, John Harbaugh says, there's nothing to see here, guys. Total misunderstanding. It's just like a PR clerical paperwork thing. Misunderstanding. In light of the scandal this week with the NBA and a coach and a player getting arrested by the FBI at the crack of dawn Friday, this is a very big deal. It is a very big deal. Think the Ravens, and this is speculation, but I can tell you the whole league is talking about, Ravens are going to get penalized, and do not be surprised if it is a loss of draft pick. It is that kind of violation, and the league is going to, my gut tells me, this isn't insider reporting, my gut tells me they're going to drop the hammer.
Yep. And the timing couldn't have been dumber for the Ravens to try this malarkey. We all pretty much know what happened. Like they were trying to pull a wool over everybody's eyes. And look, if John Harbaugh was in like his first, second year as an NFL head coach, he might be able to pull off the whole, oh, what a mistake. We just didn't know any better. No, John, you've been coaching for a long, long time. You absolutely knew the rules here, and we all know what you were trying to do. And to do this on a week where the NBA is in the headlines for insider information being let out. I've got, you know, oh, hey, LeBron's not going to play in this game. You might want to bet the other side. I see people on social media saying, why is this even a big deal? Who cares? It's only for the gamblers, I guess. But now that sports betting is such a big part of everything that's going on in the sporting world, and the NFL's gotten into business with gambling companies, they have to be more vigilant about this. And you can't have teams playing games with the injury report. I thought the Falcons did too, to be honest. Like, we all thought Michael Penix was going to play. And then all of a sudden, Saturday night, it's like, oh, actually, Michael Penix is going to get ruled out. Whoa, what happened on Saturday? You knew that he was going to get ruled out. And you played it off all week. Like, oh, yeah, Penix probably playing. No, you knew. And so don't
but he was limited all week,
off
right?
the hook either.
Wasn't he limited on Friday?
Yes. Okay. I'm not saying they misdiagnosed.
There's
a
big difference there.
There is. They didn't mislabel. Like the Ravens just clearly mislabeled Lamar Jackson on the injury report to probably throw off the Bears because all these teams get so paranoid about, oh, we're going to keep them guessing, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think John Harbaugh is feeding insider information to anybody in the gambling business, but that they got to be hyper vigilant about this in the NFL now, especially with just happened days before in the NBA. This is a loss of draft picks for the draft pick, at least for the Ravens. To me, I'd be stunned if it's anything less than that, even if it's a late round pick. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna be a first or anything like that, but you have to send a message. We're in a new era now, especially when the NFL is involved with sports betting companies, that injury report shenanigans are not allowed. And this clearly was. John Harbaugh knew what they were doing. And even if he didn't, that's not an excuse. You've been around long enough, you should know. Okay? Like that, it just, it was kind of ridiculous. And I'm with you. hammer the Ravens over this. This was very shady, and it wasn't right. And you can't do it in this environment anymore. And I think, yes, I think the NFL is getting ready to make an example out of them.
And the line dropped from 6.5 to 1.5 as soon as the announcement mm-hmm. was made. If you had gone limited, 3 days, questionable. Remember, there is no doubt.
We all know, Andrew, we all know questionable means you're going to play. Questionable is a new problem.
Well, no. I disagree. Because there's no longer doubtful. There's no longer doubtful. That is no longer an official designation. So it's either questionable or you're going to play.
We would agree that the Ravens knew Lamar Jackson was out on Friday. And we would agree that the Falcons knew Michael Penix was out on Friday.
We absolutely agree. But you can't list him as full. If you list him as full, that means in all likelihood he's going to play.
Right.
If you went limited, questionable, there is no gray area. You're fine. All you do is you come out Saturday and you say, he's now been ruled out. Teams do that all the time. Teams do that when they know the guy's not going to play. They go questionable, limited and questionable on Friday. And then they're like, we're going to buy another 24 hours. And then at 1 o'clock on Saturday, they rule him out. Teams do that all the time.
Right.
All the time. They know a guy's not going to play. Limited, questionable, will rule him out Saturday afternoon. And that is considered within the spirit of the reporting rules.
That's going to change too now. This week is going to change a lot of that. Because I don't think you could be, because of the gambling aspect of it. It does have to do with the gambling. I don't think you could be spirit of the law anymore. I don't think you could be, because there are guys in that organization who knew Lamar Jackson on Friday was not going to play. Right? Like, it's not a big secret.
Anyone that saw him took scout team knows he's not playing.
And then all it takes is a guy on that scout team or a guy on the roster or a guy in the building to call his buddy and say, hey, that line is 6.5. You might want to get on the Bears in that one because Lamar's going to be ruled out tomorrow. That's what insider information is. It's not legal, but it happens. And you open your, when you play these injury report shenanigans, and you do, because you're right, you're absolutely right that it is allowed right now, and it's perfectly, I guess, above board for teams to be like limited, questionable, and then Saturday they're like, oh, actually he's out. You knew all week he was going to be out, right? That opens the door for this stuff in the gambling community that the NBA got in trouble for just now, and the NFL's going to, it's a Pandora's box that was opened, and there's no question about it. And the NFL walked right into it when they got involved with these gambling companies, the sponsors. Now they have to deal with it. And I think part of it is going to be a big overhaul of how the injury report works.
Coming up, some numbers that will blow your mind about the Indianapolis Colts. They are not just good this year, they're historically good. Like this decade, any decade, good. Also coming up, wait to hear what Justin Fields had to say. This is a reminder, we're talking about human beings here that have lives and emotions. That's Frank, I'm Andrew, and this is Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage, everybody, on Yahoo after a blowout Sunday and Thursday, for that matter, or maybe even Monday by the time you listen to this. Week number 8. My name is Andrew Siciliano. Frank Schwab is here. Coming up in a little bit, we'll break down Frank's look ahead to the trade deadline 8 days away. If the AFC Championship were to be played right now, by the way, it wouldn't be because the season is not over. The AFC Championship game would be at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana, because, Frank, the Colts are doing things that we haven't seen in decades from an offense. I did a little bit of a deeper dive on some of these numbers. And by the way, they won. Okay. They blow out the Titans, another one of these blowouts. What was the final score of this one? Look, it's on the screen, 38-14.
Like, yeah. Oh, that was terrible.
38-14. So there's this advanced metric called points per possession. You can figure out what that means. Divide the number of points scored by the number of times the team has the ball. They're averaging 3.46, the Colts are, points per possession. That's the highest of any team in the last 25 years.
Wow.
So the Chiefs and the Cowboys are 2 and 3 on that list. And this is great historical perspective on the screen right now. The Chiefs and the Cowboys at 2 and 3 below the Colts are both below 3 points per possession. They're in like the 2.7s, 2.8s. That's how much better the Colts are. And in comparison, last year they averaged 1.9 points a possession. They've scored 30 points in 6 of their first 8. Okay. And Daniel Jones already has 100 passer rating in 7 games so far. Wow. The only other quarterbacks to have 100 passer rating 7 times in their first 8 games were Brady and Rodgers, and they both won the MVP. I'm not saying Daniel Jones should win the MVP, but what I am saying is that Jonathan Taylor is putting together a season that is as good as any running back the last 30 years. And I'm including LaDainian Tomlinson when he scored the single season NFL record of 31 touchdowns in 2006. LT, again, 31 touchdowns that year in 06. Jonathan Taylor has 3 or more touchdowns 4 times already this year. That hasn't been done since 1949. So he's leading the league in scoring. He has, Jonathan Taylor, 12 more points than Cowboys kicker Brandon Aubrey. Last year, 18 of the top 20 scorers in the NFL were kickers. The highest a position player was on the list was 14. That was Jahmyr Gibbs. No non-kicker has led the league in scoring since LT 19 years ago. Jonathan Taylor could lead the league in scoring. He is the MVP. He's got to be the MVP, because in this day and age where guys regularly hit field goals from 50, from 55, from 60, from 63, position players don't lead the NFL in scoring. Jonathan Taylor is going to do that.
I'm with you. I am a champion of non-quarterbacks being involved in the MVP race. I think Cooper Kupp should have won a few years ago. I think Saquon should have got a little more last year. I don't know. There were 2 great quarterback seasons. I'll go to my grave saying MVP died when J.J. Watt didn't win it in 2013, or maybe it was 14. But the odds are against Jonathan Taylor. I'm going to go real quick history on you, Andrew, because I have talked about this ad nauseum. Since 1993, Every single MVP has come from one of 3 buckets: a quarterback, a running back who rushes for 2,000 yards, or a running back who rushes for a single season touchdown record. Again, quarterback, running back for 2,000 yards, running back who sets a single season touchdown record. That's since 1993 in Emmitt Smith. There has only been 1 MVP from a non-quarterback since, I believe, 2006. That was Adrian Peterson, 2012. He rushed for 2,000 yards. If Jonathan Taylor can hit one of these, if he can break LT's scoring record, which I don't think he's going to do, if he can get to 2,000 yards, which maybe, I don't know, he's playing at that level, then maybe he gets some eyes on him. Otherwise, voters have made it very clear, and some of our good friends and colleagues are MVP voters. I've talked to them about this. They've made it very clear that non-quarterbacks are not allowed to win anymore. That's just the way it goes.
Okay, what if he leads the league in scoring?
Like Randy Moss came in second. I just don't think it matters. I've seen voters over and over. I saw J.J. Watt have maybe the most dominant season I've ever seen from a non-quarterback, and he couldn't come close to beating Aaron Rodgers. And what was a solid Aaron Rodgers year? It is just who is the quarterback on a number 1 or number 2 seed? That's the MVP. Sorry, Jonathan Taylor. Here's NFL Offensive Player of the Year for your troubles. That's what's going to happen. And I hate it. I want non-quarterbacks to be involved and really be involved in the MVP conversation. I don't think it's going to happen. And unless, look, if the Colts go 16-1, right? I mean, if Jonathan Taylor hits 2,000, because that's kind of a magical mark, I guess if he leads the NFL in scoring, that is something on his resume. I just think the voters have said,
amazing.
No,
nobody does
it. It's unbelievable. And he should be the MVP right now. Like we've talked about other guys. Mahomes played great. And I don't have necessarily a problem. It's not an anti-Mahomes thing. But I think Jonathan Taylor has done more for his team, who has the best record in football right now, than any other player. Even yesterday, Daniel Jones, it was a quote. Somebody asked him about, the offense, blah, blah, blah. He said, yeah, it's really easy when a guy who just breaks off an 80-yard touchdown run. That's true. That's what Jonathan Taylor is doing these days. He has been absolutely positively dominant. If he keeps up this, I think he should get MVP consideration. I just know he won't. The history's there. The recent history is there that over decades, voters do not consider non-quarterbacks anymore.
Here's why I think he's going to get it in this case, and why this case is a little bit different. Because let's say they go 14-3. Okay, let's say they go 13-4.
Number one seed.
Let's say they're the one seed. And like it's hard to wrap our heads around it. But look at the Colts. Schedule. I think the Colts are going to be the number one seed in the AFC. Okay.
Yeah.
The road to the AFC championship game is going to go through Lucas Oil. They're not going to give the MVP to Daniel Jones. Now, he's had a superb season. But in terms of leading the league in passing yardage or touchdowns, and that's Herbert and that's Stafford or, you know, whatever. Okay, he's not going to be in the top three or four. So you're not going to get – he's not going to get the MVP votes. So that's why I think Taylor could. But I'm with you. I understand it, Frank. It is that tough. But just – I don't know if people understand, and we're only halfway there, but maybe I didn't do it clearly, just how rare it is for a non-kicker to lead the league in scoring, even to be within sniffing distance of it. It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Non-kickers aren't even in the top 10 almost ever.
Right.
Ever. Like Moss did it when he scored 23 touchdowns, which is the single season receiving touchdown record in 07 with Brady, and then the Giants beat him to the Super Bowl, and then LT the year before. Those are unicorn seasons. They should have their own wing in Canton on so they could tell the story of those seasons. And we're only halfway there. But halfway there, Jonathan Taylor is having a season that you can count on one hand the number of players have ever done. Like, you got to go back to Jim Brown era when you didn't have this. We're not in the modern kicking era. Go back to the Jim Brown era when Jim Brown would score 18 touchdowns in a 14-game season and lead the league in scoring. That was a different conversation than the modern conversation we're having now. Anyway, the Colts are good. They blow everybody
Real
out.
Real quick, I'm going to say it's one thing. It. I just want this on the record, Andrew. I just want this on the record. If the Colts get the number one seed and everything kind of plays out as it has the rest of the season, Daniel Jones will get more MVP votes than Jonathan Taylor. I would bet that right now. I'd bet a lot of money on it, too.
Mark the take. Can we mark the
Not
take?
Not that he deserves it. I think
Let's mark the take.
Jonathan Taylor on Wisconsin. I love Jonathan Taylor. He's a great, great player. The history is the history. The formula is the formula, and MVP is decided a certain way, and that's why Jonathan Taylor probably won't get it. Saquon Barkley couldn't win it last year. Jonathan Taylor can't win it this year.
That's a fair point. All right, let's get to the Eagles. Look at you. Again, a talented broadcast professional with the perfect transition to our next topic here. Let's talk about trust issues, because we all deep down inside have trust issues. Okay, maybe we don't like to talk about those trust issues. Maybe we talk about them best when we're on the couch talking to a professional. Maybe even then we still build walls because we have trust issues with the person that we're speaking to in that setting. But either way, let's talk about trust issues with two teams, the Eagles and the Broncos, both of whom won their games in convincing fashion on Sunday. The Eagles beat the Giants. They swept the Giants. Rather, they get even. They go 1-1 to the Giants. The Giants now have not swept the Eagles. They had a chance on Sunday in 19 years. Well, 19 consecutive. Wow. It's the last time they did it was 07, which is just absurd. Philadelphia is 16-4 in their last 20 games, Frank, including the playoffs. They scored on 6 of 9 drives on Sunday, 5 touchdowns and a field goal. Saquon had his first 100-yard rushing performance of the season. Tank Bigsby, they paid a nice price to get him from Jacksonville. He, too, had a 100-yard game. Eagles outgained the Giants. That's the first time they've outgained any team this year. And they've outrushed the Giants, or they did, by over 200 yards. I believe in the Eagles. I think they'll find a way almost every week, despite their offensive inconsistency. However, others don't trust them. Do you trust the Eagles, Frank?
I do. They played with their food a little bit in September, had the bad loss to the Broncos in the fourth quarter, and then really just were flat as heck 4 days later against the Giants. But there's nothing holding the Eagles back. They still have this unbelievably talented roster. Their record's still really good. Andrew, if you could tell me one stat, if you could reveal one stat from the end of the season right now, and I would say, okay, now I know how the season's going to play out for the NFL, it would be Saquon Barkley's rushing yards. If Saquon Barkley can get going, like that 65-yard run he had yesterday had to be like the heavens opening up for the Eagles, because that's what they lived on last year. It was awesome. That's what made them a special team, with Saquon Barkley being a special back. He has not been a special back so far. Maybe it's a 482 touches last year. I don't know. But yesterday, we finally saw Saquon look like Saquon from last year. Got hurt at the end. Nobody seems to think it's serious. We'll see how the injury report works, right? But I think just the fact that they saw explosive Saquon Barkley That is the key to them being a special team again. If you told me Saquon Barkley by the end of the year has broken off a string of six straight 100-yard games and blah, 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 I'll tell you the Eagles are going to run away with everything, because that is the one thing keeping them from being a special team. Is it Saquon Barkley from those first 7 weeks when he's just okay, whatever? Or is it the Saquon Barkley from last season and week eight when he looks like absolutely special? Because that just, it takes the Eagles to another tier and they become then the best team in the NFL.
All right. I trust them. I also trust they're not going to trade A.J. Brown. I also trust that they are going to likely have a home game because I think they're going to win the division. I do trust the Eagles. I don't know that that means they're going back to Santa Clara. I am not ready to write that ticket, meaning they're going to get to the Super Bowl. But I do trust the Eagles. And if they played in any other city other than Philadelphia, not to suggest that all 32 teams aren't treated differently. I mean, or all, you know what I'm saying? If they were the defending Super Bowl champion, the Tennessee Titans, we would not be sitting here picking apart their performances week in
100%
and
right.
week out. All right. They have won 16 of 20 games. I trust them. After watching the Broncos beat up on the Cowboys yesterday in your backyard, Frank, final score on that one. 44-24. Do you trust the Denver Broncos?
I absolutely do. And I felt like I was kind of on an island for a few weeks with that. I'm looking at the Broncos saying, maybe the best defense in football. I know like the Texans have a say in that, whatever. But, you know, they're in top three or four. We all know that. And you're saying the only thing the Broncos need to do is have Sean Payton figure out the offense? I'll go with that. I'll ride with that. Sean Payton's going to get this thing figured out. Bo Nix has had a bad start to the season. There's no way around that, but you saw in the fourth quarter against the Eagles, fourth quarter against the Giants. You saw it all day on Sunday. He still has it. Like it's not like he's just disappeared. It's just they need to get in a rhythm on offense. I think they finally found that. Now, look, the Cowboys defense stinks. It's awful. Bo Nix throwing for four touchdowns against the Cowboys defense doesn't prove that they're back on track or anything, but I just look at this Broncos team who their only two losses, I keep saying this over and over and over, no time left on the clock at Indianapolis on a leverage penalty. All right, we love Indianapolis. Well, the Broncos should have beat them in Indianapolis. And a loss with no time left on the clock at the Chargers, who look awesome this week and are seriously a playoff caliber team. Those are the only losses the Broncos have. They're that close to being undefeated. What conversation are we having about the Broncos right now if they're undefeated? They would have let off the show. So I do believe in the Broncos. I think if the offense shows up, there's a chance they could beat the Chiefs for the AFC West. And I know that's stupid to say because the Chiefs always prove me wrong, but this Broncos team is really, really, really good. And we're going to see them get on a roll in November and December, and they're going to be a Super Bowl contender going into the playoffs. I truly believe that. And honestly, I always have. I watch that offense and be very frustrated over it because, come on, like this offense looks ridiculous right now. They're worse than they were with Bo Nix's rookie year. But I always, in the back of my mind, just said, Sean's going to figure this out. Sean's too good of an offensive coach for this offense to look this bad all year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I believe in them. And, you know, you could look at it the other way and say, oh, well, those are really close calls. And they've had some close calls where they barely won as well. Like the game in Philadelphia, they barely won. They barely won the game in London. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they won them. Yep. They did. Those count. If you take their two losses and their two, oh, we barely survived, that's a four-game stretch. They're like, oh, I'm not sure. But in the end, we're sitting here, they're 6-2. And they go to Houston this week. Texans played a good game on Sunday. CJ's best game in at least a year. So maybe they figured something out. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was the opponent.
49ers are trouble.
The line of that game never made sense to me. A game at a 1.5, but hey, they won. They go, talking about the Broncos here, they go to Houston. Then they're home for Vegas. Then they're home for Kansas City. They still do have to play the Chiefs twice, including that game on Christmas.
And don't forget, they should have won at Kansas City last year. I know week 18, Kansas City sat everybody. I'm not even counting that. At Arrowhead last year, the Broncos should have beat them, just had a field goal blocked at the end. And that miracle string of Chiefs wins last year, one of them was the Broncos. Broncos ain't scared of the Chiefs. That's going to be those two games are going to be awesome. Those two games are, circle those on your calendar. Fantastic football games to come up.
The Broncos get the Raiders twice in the next 5 weeks. They also have a bye. They also have at Houston, at Washington. Who knows what the Commanders are, honestly, at this point. Jaden Daniels should be back by then, certainly. But they're not a very good team, especially defensively. And they get a bye week in there as well. Then the end of the schedule, Green Bay, Jacksonville, Kansas City, and the Chargers. I mean, that is a tough stretch right there. Anyone who looked at the Broncos schedule early or in the offseason said they've got to get out to a good stretch early because the back half gets very difficult. Well, they've done that. They're 6-2, and they're in good position now with two more against the Chiefs and two more against the Raiders on the schedule. I actually don't have trust issues with the Denver Broncos. I believe in the Denver Broncos. And R.J. Harvey scoring three touchdowns, even though that number 12 looks so odd. Like 12 for a running back. Is he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? He's also not very big. And then he's taking snaps. Former high school quarterback, taking direct snaps in a single wing. And you're like, who is that guy? Wait a minute. Who's 12? I shouldn't know who 12 is. Oh, that's R.J. Harvey. Wait a minute. Now he's scoring again. Like, it kind of throws me off. But yeah, I believe in them. I believe in Justin Fields. Maybe not Justin Fields, the quarterback, but Justin Fields, the person. And I want to play you what he said on the podium yesterday after that stunning Jets win. That's coming up next on Inside Coverage. So, I'm going to ask rhetorically, how interesting will the trade deadline be? Anybody? Well, you know what? It doesn't have to be a rhetorical question because Frank Schwab's writing about it right now on Yahoo. You could read Frank's article about not only which players could be traded, but which teams might be moved to make moves. Frank, the 49ers lost in Houston. We just talked about them. They're now 5-3. It's Mac Jones still at quarterback. They have so many banged up pieces, especially on defense with Warner out, with Bosa out. What do you think the Niners do at the deadline?
This is the most interesting team to me going into the trade deadline because I don't know. I don't have a good answer on what I think they should do. They're 5-3. So it's tough to just stamp pat and be like, you know what? We don't think it's our year. But you look at that defense. They lost Fred Warner. They lost Nick Bosa. Looked great against the Falcons on that Sunday night. But I think a real 49ers defense showed up on Sunday, gave up 475 yards to a Texans offense that hasn't been good all year and didn't have Nico Collins, okay? This 49ers defense is not just going to be fixed by one move. You could go get Max Crosby, Trey Hendricks, whoever the bell of the ball is at the trade deadline. I don't know that that completely fixes a 49ers defense. And now you're the 49ers thinking, okay, choose your own adventure, fork in the road here, right? You're 5-3. You should still feel like the bones of that Super Bowl team is still there. We can make a run at this because we're really an aging roster and the window might be closing soon. Or, look, one move ain't going to help us anyway. We need to start thinking about reloading a little bit, right? Like we don't want to give up valuable assets, what it would take to go get a Trey Hendrickson. So I don't know, Andrew. I can't figure out what the 49ers should do. What do you think? Do you think a 5-3 team could just stamp pat at the trading deadline? I don't know that they – I don't know. I do not know what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan do here.
Yeah, no, I would not stand pat, but I also don't want to leverage the future. This is a team that in the offseason moved on from a lot of high-priced veterans, guys that they didn't just cut because they were overpaid, guys that they cut because they had to – turn the corner and start getting younger, and they couldn't possibly pay a guy like Malik Collins anymore, and they just let him go. He's a highly productive player that wasn't making that much money. They need to get younger. How much of your future are you truly willing to trade away? And do you think, and this is one of Kyle's greatest coaching jobs he's ever had and ever done with all these guys injured, do you think you can make a legitimate run if you go trade for a rotational third round defensive end to get after the passer? I don't think so. You're hoping for Brandon Ayuk to come back.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a couple of years ago, they get Chase Young. That was a no brainer. Mm-hmm. So they get Chase Young. And if he leaves, you're going to get back the compensatory three, which was like a pick right around like 102, 103, 104, 105 in that window there. Like that made all the sense in the world. It was a free Chase Young, in essence, when they got him from Washington. I don't know that deal is out there right now. And I don't know. And they got no pass rush, by the way, on C.J. Stroud. The Texans O-line, which looked awful Monday night in Seattle, all of a sudden looked like they fixed all their problems. Mm. All their problems in the short week at home against the 49ers, whose defense looked fantastic a week ago. I'm really lost if I'm John Lynch. I would not mortgage the future. I would only make a deal here if it is truly, truly sensible. What about Breece Hall? He's been a workload, a workhorse with a heavy workload. Although Isaiah Davis got some run yesterday again, it was Breece Hall the game-winning touchdown, right, to Mason Taylor. You got to move him. I don't know if I'd move him. Like, how about Quinnen Williams? Like, if you're the Jets, like, the Jets aren't going anywhere. Would you trade one of those pieces?
I would trade Breece Hall just because he does have an injury history. His career's kind of been up and down. He looked awesome on Sunday, and I don't think his value is going to get any higher. 133 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, as you said, through the game-winning touchdown. He looked great. But you're the Jets. You're a 1-7 football team. Breece Hall, his rookie contract's going to be done after the year. He's in the last year of that. What good is holding on to that asset? I don't understand what your point is there. Does Breece Hall get you to playoff contention? Absolutely not. So why don't you get something for Breece Hall? I think there are some teams out there could really use a guy like, imagine him on the Chiefs, right? Like, there's some teams that could really use a Breece Hall, and I think would pay a little bit above market value for him because he's coming off this great game, and you can see the potential there. He's still a young guy. I think the Jets either have to commit, hey, we're signing Breece Hall to an extension, or we're moving on and trading him right now. One of the two. I don't think you can play the middle ground, and that's why I think Breece Hall will move. But the Jets have been kind of resistant to this. I would trade Breece Hall and play Isaiah Davis, who looked pretty good yesterday. You know how running back is. Running back is a turnover kind of a position. Like, you don't have 10, 15-year careers at running back unless you're Derrick Henry, so I would sell high right now on Breece Hall if I was a Jets. I just don't see the reason to keep him around.
He's a former second-round pick. It's time to pay the guy. He does have an injury history. Certainly, if you're not ready to pay him, if you're not going to cut him a check, that doesn't have to be the biggest Saquon-like check, but if you're not ready to cut him a check, then yeah, move on. I would certainly. I don't know what you're going to get for him because teams don't overpay in draft pick compensation for running backs. They just don't. But down right. the stretch, Chiefs are a perfect example. If you need one and you think you can get them at the right price, go for it. There's also then the Bengals, 3-5 now, and Trey Hendrickson, who is not necessarily healthy, obviously. If you were to trade him, it's not a clean one-year deal here. There's like the issue of a franchise tag. Like, I don't know. To me, the Bengals are waving the white flag, where they are only one game back in the win column in that division if they trade him.
Tough. They're in a tough spot too, but how much different is it if they beat the Jets? And that's a funny thing about the trade deadline in the NFL. Like, the result of one game can completely change your mindset. They win that game, which they were up the entire game until the end. If you win that game, you're 4-4. And you're like, well, the Steelers are really vulnerable. We're not positive the Ravens are back. So let's hold on to everybody and go for it. Now you look at it, you're like, this team just got shredded on defense by Justin Fields and the Jets, who, as Woody Johnson put, couldn't complete a pass before that. And if I'm the Bengals, I think I hit the eject button. And that's tough because, like you said, they're not out of it in the AFC North. Nobody's going to be out of it in the AFC North all year because it's not a very good division. But I look at that defense and say, "This, what are we doing? Joe Flacco has played well, but is that going to go all year? I don't know. Defense is not good. I think I just, and Trey Hendrickson is the one guy who you could see getting traded for a mega deal. Like, not multiple first round picks like Micah Parsons or anything, because you talked about his contract, his age. But I don't think Max Crosby's going anywhere. I'm still skeptical about that. So the one guy who you say, this guy might actually be available is Trey Hendrickson. And they also have, look, linebacker Logan Wilson, who is very productive off ball linebacker for them, he's been phased out. He only played 20 snaps on Sunday. Two rookies, Barrett Carter and Demetrius Knight, are playing ahead of him. You could trade him too, get something back from a team that could use a good linebacker like Logan Wilson. I think the Bengals should go into sell mode. And I get it. I do understand completely what you mean, that they're not out of it by any means. But I think you have to have an honest assessment of who you are. And I don't look at that as a playoff team.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. You can also make the argument that, you know, how much worse can the defense be without him? Their defense just has not been fixed. Al Golden has not fixed the defense. It's as bad as it has ever been. They lead the league in missed tackles, and it's not even close. Wow. They're number one, and they are cruising to the moon here. But I wouldn't trade Trey Hendrickson because to me, it sends like the awful message to the locker room. We're out. We don't care anymore. And I don't think anyone's, I don't think they're going to get the right return. That's just me. Now, if they get the right return, then go for it. But, and reload with younger players next year. I just don't know that they're going to get it because Trey Hendrickson, look, all summer, anybody could have had Trey. They could have had him. And the Bengals wanted the outrageous two number ones. No one's giving you one number one.
Nobody's giving that up.
I like the guy, but nobody's giving you one number one for him. We'll see. Somebody make an offer. I want to switch gears here because you mentioned Justin Fields, and I think this is really worth playing. It doesn't have anything to do with touchdowns and fantasy football and things like that. But we know what happened last week. Woody Johnson, as Frank alluded to, the Jets owner came out and said, we can't even complete a pass. And he was referring directly to Justin Fields. He said, the team is not winning. They are winless because of Justin Fields, although he never mentioned him by name. And when the owner says that we can't complete a pass and win a game with this guy, then you know that there's got to be a quarterback change. Well, the coach, Aaron Glenn, couldn't change quarterbacks because Tyrod Taylor was a knee injury and Tyrod Taylor couldn't go. So they had to play Justin Fields. And the Jets were down 14 points on the road in the fourth quarter to the Bengals, who were cruising to a victory after beating the Steelers. And out of their little mini bye, they were rolling and right back in it. And then the Jets rallied. And then the Jets won. And then Justin Fields... Take a minute. This is going to be 2 minutes of raw humanity. Went to the podium and said this.
It's been a lot for me, emotionally, spiritually. When I was out on the field, I was damn near about to start crying, but not because of we won, but just because of the goodness of God and just how everything, you know, works for the greater good. Everything that I've been through this past week, everything that we've been through as a team these past 7 weeks. There was a lot of ups and downs. You know, I got a lot of support from my teammates, from my brothers, from my family, from my friends, and most of all, I'm just thankful, thankful for the Lord's that He blessed me. I mean, shoot. Yesterday, I'm praying like crazy, just for a win, and you know, this I'm gonna get pretty vulnerable right here, but this week I kind of, you know, I found myself in my closet crying, on the ground, laying down, not because of the hardships, not because of the troubles. I felt like, you know, I was built to handle that, and I was put in place to handle this situation. But in that moment when I was talking to my best friend, you know, how hard it was, and just, you know, not wavering faith-wise, I just had gotten a text from my sister and my stepmom, and it was just an encouraging text on, you know, just keep going and keep spreading the faith. And they just sent me a link on social media, and I tell you guys all the time that I'm not on social media, so I didn't see it. So that was just a sign from God for me to keep going, and that, you know, I'm in the right place. Yesterday I was just praying over and over and over again, like, yo, like, just one win, and you know, but all that to say is that, you know, God is real, God is good, and everything that we go through in this life is for a purpose. So yeah.
You can question Justin Fields, the quarterback. I hope you don't question Justin Fields, the person. I don't know that anyone ever truly has. But Frank, that video, I wanted to play it because when I was watching it yesterday, sitting at an airport, sitting at Logan in Boston, ready to fly back here to Los Angeles, it hit me. I don't know that I got emotional, but when you watch Justin Fields open up that way and say, hey, guys, I'm about to get vulnerable, I want fans to remember, because at times we forget, these guys are human beings too. And while they may not be on social media, they do hear when the owner sarcastically, you know, just tears you down, right? They do hear when fans yell stuff from the stands. I'm not telling you to not boo. You pay your admission, right? You're allowed to boo. You're allowed to say this guy's not playing well. Just please, like, remember, in this day and age when guys are getting death threats on Twitter because, you know, prop bet didn't hit, or maybe it has nothing to do with your fantasy team or gambling. You just feel the need to type something with your thumbs at a guy that you've never met and try to tear him down emotionally because your enjoyment on Sunday or Monday or Thursday is somehow substandard because he didn't play well. Just remember Justin Fields and see that raw vulnerability and emotion that he's a man. He's a brother. He's a child to a mother. He's a real human being. I don't know how else right. to say it. Guys don't open up that much. Just know that it affects them too. Every now and then you hear fans yell back at players on social media or on sports talk radio and say, don't tell me that it means more to you than it does to me. It means more to me than it does to you. You're just a hired gun coming into town. I've been rooting for this team every day for 30 years. Guys, it means something to them too. It truly, truly, truly does. They are not avatars that you move around Sunday morning before 1 o'clock on your phone in your fantasy lineup to make sure it's actually set. Frank, as you could see, like, real people.
Yeah, well said. And also the whole, like, well, Justin Fields is getting paid $20 million. Like, I could,
yes,
he doesn't good care. Like, no, it, just because you make money does not mean that this doesn't matter to you in a very serious way. And there's very, very few people on this earth that can understand what Justin Fields is going through. I mean, he's a very high profile guy for a very high profile team in a tough market, and he was struggling. There's no doubt. We talk 4 times a week on Inside Coverage about football. You got to point out when, hey, Justin Fields right now should be benched. He's not playing well enough. I said that last week. And I think that was legit. He wasn't playing well enough. But yes, these are people. These are actual people. This is a difficult, high pressurized job that they have. Highly physical, obviously, we know that. But they deal with a lot of stuff. And I thought it was just a great message for him to put out there. I felt great for the Jets on Sunday. And I usually do. For those, you have no idea. Me and you have been in locker rooms for forever now. And you have no idea how miserable it is in an NFL locker room when they're on a losing streak. After one loss, it's miserable. The rest of the week is miserable. And to do that 7 straight times and you're 0-7 and the whole world's against you and you don't know when you're going to win a game and Justin Fields probably going to get benched if Tyrod Taylor's healthy. Aaron Glenn is already like having questions about, is this the right guy? And I just felt so good for Aaron Glenn and that whole crew, especially Justin Fields after Woody Johnson ripped him. Hats off to the Jets. Hats off to Justin Fields for sharing a very vulnerable moment, as he said. As you said, Andrew, well said by you, by the way, these are real people. These aren't just modern day gladiators. These are actual people who have very high stress jobs, and not many of us know exactly what they go through on a day-to-day basis.
And I think it also carries a lot more weight in light of the fact that they lost Nick Mangold. We, the NFL world, lost Nick Mangold Sunday morning. He came out a couple of weeks ago, made a public plea for a new liver. He's battling kidney disease. And then, I tell you, Frank, I was in our booth and we got the news about a half hour before kickoff and our jaws collectively just dropped. Like, wait, what? And I think the NFL world had the same reaction. For the Jets to win, not far from where Nick Mangold went to high school, right, in Cincinnati, and got their first win of the season, had a little more meaning. Like, they were a team with a purpose, and I'm not suggesting it gives Nick Mangold's widow and their four kids any more solace. Like, they are grieving, and then the Jets grieve. The Buckeye family grieves with them. But you know what? Good for Justin Fields and good for the Jets to rally and to get that victory Sunday. And on that note, not necessarily a happy note, a somber note, but hopefully a life-affirming note as well. That's how we're going to wrap up the show today. We've had fun regardless, and we are back on Tuesday. We are back looking at the Monday night game, and maybe we hand out some mid-season awards on Tuesday. Yeah, we have awards. Let's argue over things Tuesday. For Frank, I'm Andrew. Thank you for joining us for Inside Coverage. wow, 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 wow.